Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for your attention. Thank you. That was relatively easy for such a sizable crowd. I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago, and on behalf of our Board of Governors, welcome to City Club. Welcome back to City Club to all of you. We always appreciate you taking time out of your day to be here. I'm going to start, and if you could hold your applause. It's obviously a very full room, and it's full of incredible people and incredible sponsors and friends of City Club. And I'd like to mention the sponsors first, because as you all know, we wouldn't be able to do this and partner with groups like Advance Illinois to provide this without the sponsorship. So bear with me and please share appreciation at the end here for, of course, Advance Illinois, for Afton Partners, Chicago Public Education Fund, Francic PC, Hope Chicago, Illinois Network of Charter Schools, the Joyce Foundation, Lloyd A. Fry Foundation, Massey and Gale LLP, Robert R. McCormick Foundation, Essentiles Technologies, the Staines Family Foundation, University of Illinois Chicago, IMC Chicago Charitable Foundation, Golden Apple Foundation for Excellence in Teaching. We're glad you're in the room. I hope you all got in okay. Such a full room. Dan Showman, Inc. Teach for America is here, working in the schools, and World Business Chicago. Thank you very much to all those sponsors. And we always like to acknowledge who else is in this room. We like to call this the room where it happens. This is where things get done. And it's such a great mix of sectors and mix of people. And I'm going to start by, as we all know, there are a few things going on in our city, in our world. I'm going to mention a few elected officials, and I do believe some of them are dealing with some issues right now in their communities, specifically with some ICE, raids or whatever you want to call them that are happening at this very moment. So with that in mind, let's think about all the folks who are involved in that, who are helping in those efforts, especially our elected officials. But let's think about our friends and our neighbors who are all so many who are living in fear and hope that some of the things that we talk about today and other days can move things forward enough so we don't have to worry about that and about them. So with that, Senator Kimberly Lightford, who I think we're going to hear from, Senator Graciela Guzman, Representative Mary Beth Canty, Representative Laura Favor-Diaz, Representative Justin Slaughter, Representative Mike Crawford. I think those are elected officials. If you are here and I mention your name, please raise your hand and let's give them a round of applause. And if you're not here, we understand that you're on your way or taking care of our people in this great city, in this great state. Speaking of this great state, we have Deputy Governor Martin Torres is here. And Dr. from the governor's office, of course, Deputy Governor, and Dr. Stephen Isoye, who you're going to hear from in a minute, the chair of the Illinois Board of Education. Chancellor Marilyn Miranda is here from UIC, as is President Z. Scott. So always good to have you back. Interim CEO Dr. Macklin King is here from CPS, as well as Chancellor Juan Salgado. Where are you? I know you're here. Thank you. These are all folks who have either spoken or we hope will soon speak here at City Club and that you'll all come back to hear them. Another City Club speaker is Commissioner Chris Brown from the libraries. Thank you, Commissioner. And I'd also like to mention a former and future City Club speaker. It's her one-year anniversary at the Joyce Foundation. Dr. Julie Morita is here with us. Thank you. We're also going to hear from Linda Social Tortolero from the Latino Policy Forum. Thank you for being here. She's going to be on this panel. And I'll let Robin make those more official introductions in just a minute. You heard from John Edwardson. Thank you, John, for your leadership. And Jim, I mentioned Jim Francik. It's so good to see Ellen Elverding back. Welcome back, Ellen Elverding, one of our all-time favorite City Club speakers. Christina Rice from Global Girls is here. Christina and Blue, Pacheco Cornejo, building the Blue Azul Center, Andre Torres from the McCormick Foundation, David Greising from the BGA. I think Arnie Rivera is here from Navy Pier and the Illinois Tollway. Even Gary Fensick is here. Gary from the Chicago Bear, thank you for being here. As I said, this is an incredible mix of different people who care about the future of the city and who care about the future of Illinois and its foundations, its business, its nonprofit, its obviously government. And this is a unique space where you can all come together and help move this city forward. So we appreciate all of you for doing that. I also want to mention Casey's here. Casey Atero, who is another great City Club speaker at a conversation, if you haven't heard, thank you for that. Check back on our website to see her conversation with Lejeune Montgomery Tabron. Was an incredible conversation, just speaking of all that's going on in this world today. It was very uplifting. All those videos are, by the way, are on our website, and you can check those out at any time. So please do. Senator John Cullerton is also here, former president of the Senate. Thank you for your leadership. So I'm going to move. We have so much to hear and so much to talk about today. I would ask you to, we'd like to make this an interactive discussion, depending on how long we go with the panel. So please get those questions ready. I'll come up a little bit later, and we'll have a microphone, hopefully, to be able to answer some of those questions. In the meantime, we're going to hear from a leader who many of you have heard from before. She has been here at City Club, but she's also just been an incredible civic leader in Chicago and in Illinois and done so much for education. Robin Staines leads Advance Illinois as the president. She's championing policies that... I figured you know. Strengthen education and expand opportunities for all students. She also serves as the board chair of the Staines Family Foundation, where they help drive investments in education and community development, especially in North Lawndale, which we've heard about also here. So please, welcome back to the City Club, Robin Staines.
Thank you so much, Dan. It was really kind, and thank you. See, I stood up just to keep the applause going longer. Thank you for cooperating. We have introduced, I'm going to start, we're here to talk about the state of public education, and I would argue that right now that has never mattered more. Being educated, understanding how to interpret and understand the world and making decisions with good information and good facts to guide them. Is absolutely essential. And that is why, for every year of the 16 years that we've been here, every other year, Advance Illinois has put out a report on the state of public education. Because it's not so easy to just answer with one word. There's a bunch of information you need to look at. And I'm going to pause for 1 minute to do two things. One, to thank the City Club. We have launched and released our report every one of these times here at the City Club. So thank you for having us. And as a point of personal privilege, our founding co-chairs, we're designed to be a bipartisan education policy organization, and our founding co-chairs were Bill Daley and Jim Edgar. Jim Edgar passed away recently, and he actually helped with the release, the first three reports. So I'm thinking of him today, some of you maybe as well. He was an unusual leader and is deeply missed by us here at Advance Illinois, but I know by the state. But in the spirit of what they always wanted us to do, what do the facts tell us is going to be good for kids? That's why we do this report. But we don't do it alone. You may ask what we look at. We look at 80 metrics. We're going to talk about those in some detail. But we always, every time we do this, we consult with a group of people who are smart policy people, smart practitioners, savvy from all parts of the state, from all parts of the continuum. I think there are about 6 or 7 of our advisory group members here today. If you would stand so we can just say thank you. You help us understand, please. Are we looking at the right measures, and are we making the most meaning of them? And our board of directors does the same at the macro level, is constantly pushing us, what are the facts telling us? And we also, our intention there is to reflect the diversity of the state, politically, geographically, racially, and more. I think we've got about 7 or 8 board members. If you would also stand just so we can say thank you. That's why Gary Fencik is here. God love him. He is not done blocking and tackling. All right, onward. About this report. First of all, you all have a copy. I know it would sell for hundreds of dollars on the open markets. You're welcome. You can play along a little bit at home once in a while. I'll think to tell you where we are in the report. We look at 80 metrics. The 80 metrics dig into both early childhood, K-12, and higher education. And for each one, we look at how are we doing over time? How are we doing across demographic groups? How do we compare to other states in the nation, wherever we've got that information? Are we holding our own? And what is the top-performing state doing? You'll find all of that in the tables at the back, which is why you want to leave it on your bedside table. We pay attention to equity gaps. And I'm going to tell you now that one of the things that makes me the saddest is, well, happy, you're going to see along the way, we are narrowing gaps in a lot of very important places. Yes. But save for one metric where we have that information, equity gaps remain for all of the rest. So we're not done. Making progress, we're doing some of the right things, we've got more to do. And then the last thing I want to make a note about is data matters. You cannot make good practice or policy decisions if you don't have that information. And right now there's real danger. There are significant cuts and changes happening at the federal level. For the first time ever, we were scrambling for some of the data we have relied on for decades. So we have indicated with this little red slide, sometimes I'll mention it, sometimes I won't, but spot it, where those data sets are in serious trouble. They've either been targeted, named for changes, and just when you're talking to elected officials or leaders, please remind them how essential this is. The last thing I will do is that when we look at data, we look at 3 large buckets. Of course, we want to understand outcomes. At the end of the day, how are our kids doing? Are they progressing? Are they learning what they need to? But we also, some of the metrics unpack the learning conditions that make those outcomes possible. Where those are doing well, we can expect things to improve. Where they're not, we need to tighten that up because we're not going to get the outcomes if we don't pay attention to those. And we also need to pay attention to enrollment and access. It's great if we're doing a great job, but we're not getting people into the care that they need or the educational opportunities. So we're going to look at all 3 of those things because they're interlocking. All right. We usually do the latter. Those of you who have been here before fondly remember the latter. We're mixing it up just a little bit, but I want to give you a high level. How are we doing moving kids through the spectrum? And then we're going to dig into each. So the first is kindergarten readiness. We didn't used to have this data, and we do now. We can know in a comparable way, are our kids entering kindergarten ready to go across developmental domains? And the good news is they're improving. Since we started doing this about 5-6 years ago, we're steadily improving. That bodes well for how we're going to do that. Correlation with kindergarten readiness and later success is real, strong, and studied. The bad news is it's just about 1/3 of our students who are ready across developmental domains as they come in. So the work there not done. More on that in a minute. K-12, how are we doing in terms of 4th grade reading, we are at 30%, and 8th grade math, we're at 32%. That's about where we were 15 years ago. We were getting better. We were climbing up. COVID knocked us back. More on unpacking that in a minute. Our 9th grade on track is steadily improving, and we're now at about 88% of our students showing that they are likely to graduate. That correlation is very strong as well. Students who go on, they're demonstrating college and career readiness. There's some tough news there. We are down to 30% of our students from a high of 38% of our students demonstrating college and career readiness. That's mirroring national trends, but it's obviously not where we want it to be. The good news is that we are working hard to make sure that students with a range of abilities are making it through high school, and our graduation rates are at an all-time high at 87%. More on that in a minute. Higher education, the number of students that are going on immediately from high school is down a little bit. COVID really knocked enrollment, particularly in post-secondary, off. So we had been climbing on that metric pretty steadily, but we've dropped back down. So we've got some work to do there. But post-secondary completion has been steadily increasing, both in our 2-year and our 4 years. And the adults with post-secondary degrees has moved up from to 49% of our students have degrees. Overall, the state had set a goal of trying to have 60% of adults with a degree or an industry-recognized credential. There's another 8% that have earned those credentials, so we're pushing that. We're right at 57%, which is a pretty steady increase from 15 years when we started tracking it. I'm going to note here that in a perfect world, you should want to know, and I want to know, every kid that enters high school as a freshman, what is their likelihood of going on to complete a degree? That's a cohort analysis that we should be able to do. We have a longitudinal data system. It should be able to tell us the answer to that question. That's what I should also be reporting to you. And unfortunately, we are not able to get that information yet. So again, when you're talking to your elected officials about the importance of data, or people from the governor's office even, please be sure to remind them we need that investment in our longitudinal data system. That information is critical. Make very different decisions with and without it. Okay. Hi, Martin. So, how are we doing relative to other states? We tried something new, and on pages 8 and 9, if you're playing along at home, we tried something a little bit different, and it paints a real picture. We show you all the metrics that we measure, and we show you, for ones where we have national comparisons, how we look relative to other states. In early childhood, in 2 of the 5 that we've got national comparisons, we're in the top half. It's 10 out of 16 for K-12. It's 20 out of 28 for college. You're going to get a better, for higher education, you're going to get a better sense, but you'll see when you look at your higher education that we're not doing as well on the enrollment and access, but we're doing very well on the outcomes, which means we need to do a better job getting people into it, because if we can get them in, we can get them a degree. We've got to open those doors. More on that in a minute. All right. Let me set the landscape. There are a couple things we look at, just big picture, Illinois. We know that Illinois is losing population. We've been losing about a 1% overall state population decrease. School age population, it's more like 10 to 13% across those grade ranges. And we're seeing that same decrease, a proportional decrease in our K-12 enrollment, but a much outsized drop in enrollment in higher education, 28% drop. Now, the bad news is it's a 28% drop. The good news is there are people that aren't there that we need and can and should get back. But in addition to the overall population changes, the demographics of Illinois continue to change. We continue to see more Latinx students. And what the map here shows is the dispersion of English learners around the state. You see how many more. It used to be that they were clustered in Chicago in the immediate area. That's simply not true anymore. A significant number of districts have significant numbers and percentages of English learners. All right, the other thing we pay attention to just in setting the environment is how are we doing in investing in education? And I got some not great news, and I've got some outstanding news. The not great news is we've been really trying. We've been putting more money into early childhood. We've been putting more money into higher education. The actual growth in early childhood is 21% funding increase, but we're still middle of the pack. We're just 24th in the country. I don't want to make us below when we're above. So we've got work to do, and we're going to unpack that a little more in a minute. In higher education, the news is bleak. We are 48th in the nation for our state investment in higher education. And even though we put more money in the last 5 years, on an inflation-adjusted basis, the actual overall investment is down 33%, which is why we are trailing the nation. And I'm going to talk about the implications of that in a minute. So that's bad news, and we should sit with it for a minute, because that's something we can and need to do something about. But let me talk about the good news story, which is obviously the state has worked incredibly hard. It reformed the way we fund K-12, focusing on being adequate and equitable. And look at the progress. We were 47th in the nation, and now we're 18th. And I can't cover everything in this report because there's too much, so you must read it. Promise me you'll read it. But I'm going to try to point out some of the ways that that investment is starting to show up in schools, and specifically how it's showing up equitably. But 62% of our students used to be learning in districts that were below 60% funded. I want you to just, below 60% funded, 72%, 70%. I take it back. My apologies. That wasn't quite as bad. Still very bad that 62% of our students were in districts that had less than 70% of what they needed. That number has dropped to 4% of our students. So a lot of people in this room work very hard on that, so extra claps for you. But this is the way it shows up. When we don't invest what we need to invest, it makes things more affordable for families because those costs have to go and get covered somewhere. So in childcare, what we're seeing is that we should be only 7% of a median family income should be going to pay for childcare. In Illinois, it's twice that. We are working. It is down. It is not where we can stop and rest. 2 years colleges, the story's much better. We're right about where the national average is for percent of a median household income. And you can see in higher education, we're above that. If you are living, however, at or below poverty for all of these, it's going to be a real struggle for you to afford it, which explains why we're not getting some of the enrollment and access that we need. The other thing I want us to pay attention to is, as a global condition, student mental health and well-being is bad. I want to give you a more fancy word. I do all this policy work. It's just bad, and it's been getting worse. This mirrors national trends. This is a problem many districts, states, schools, colleges, and childcare centers are dealing with. But 77% of Illinois youth have experienced an adverse childhood experience, Black students are going to experience are going to be twice as likely to have reported three or more ACEs. K-12 kids, when interviewed, and this you'll see this is at risk, the CDC does this data collection. It is not being prioritized. It's been targeted by the administration to go away. This is crucial information that more students are feeling sad or hopeless. More students are considering, twice as many are considering suicide. Those increases are being felt disproportionately, in particular by students who identify as LGBTQ and by girls. And higher education is no different. Twice as many students are reporting that mental health is getting in the way of their academics. Those rates are higher among every group you would expect it to be higher among. And it's coloring everything that's going on. Anybody here who works in a childcare center, a school, or university will testify that they're feeling that. So let's go one level deeper now into early childhood education and care. When I talk about the need and the cost, what you see here, the dotted line across the top, and I should probably tell you what page. I think this is page 19. Am I right? I am right. I love when I'm... No. I am right. You don't have to clap or anything, but we'll just be excited about that. What you can... Because some of these numbers are small, so I want you to be able to look at this. The dotted line, based on our own state commission's work, which the governor assembled 5-6 years ago, is what we should be spending for our infants, our toddlers, our 2-year-olds, and our preschoolers. And you can see good news on the preschool front. When I say the state is working, the state is working. That's good news. We're almost hitting it. But look how significant those gaps are for our infants, our toddlers, and our 2-year-olds, which, again, makes it much more difficult for us to serve the number of students that we need to serve. And that's exactly what we're seeing, that only 21% of birth to 2-year-olds are being served. So, and again, that means we're pushing those costs to family. And guess who that prices out? Exactly the people that we most need to get in. It also compounds the fact that when you don't have as much, it means you can't spend as much. The state's been working very hard to raise wages for our early child care providers and workers and professionals. And in fact, those wage increases have been beating inflation. Yes! However, if you look at this, what's clear is that while 69% of early childhood professionals hold an associate's degree or higher, they are earning less than some of their peers who have just have a high school degree, which makes it very difficult to compete for the people who want to do that work. It means their vacancy rates in early child care centers is on the rise. It means the time it takes those centers to find people to fill positions is on the rise. And it also means, because there is such a struggle, some of the quality measures that we look at involve spending more dollars on credentials and staffing. They can't do that, so we're at a record low number of child care providers that are participating in our accreditation process and hold a circle of quality rating. That, too, should be of concern. That said, the good news is our kindergarten readiness, since we started measuring it, is on the move. And the two things you want to pay attention to, how many are showing readiness across all three, the number is up. How many are not showing readiness on any of the developmental domains is down. So all of that is good. The worrisome factor here is that gaps by race, by income, by language, and by learning style emerge before kids even make it to kindergarten, and those gaps have actually gotten wider in the last 5 years, not narrower, so we've got some real work to do. So let's dig in on K-12. I mentioned that we are losing our population. It is commensurate with overall population growth. But one thing that is less discussed, we don't do a good job of tracking who's being homeschooled. But the number of students who are not showing up in a public school or a registered private school used to hover around 1%. That was a pretty steady number. That has jumped up to 3 to 6% each of the last few years. We suspect they're being homeschooled, but I'll tell you, we should know, and we don't. I mentioned the number of students who are in poorly funded districts. This gives you the district picture. What we want is all of our districts to be in blue. And look what a good job we're doing. It's getting fatter and fatter and fatter. That is great news. We're down from 431 districts below that 70% marker to just 49. So it is working. Overall, it says 2.4 here because that's what was true at the time of publication, but it's actually $2.8 billion that are going to the districts and schools that need them the most. And what we see if you peel beyond those overall numbers is that the equity gaps by race, by income status, what this shows is the per pupil gap. And we want to look at that and see if the dollars are flowing as they should, we should start to see gaps close by race. Yes. By income. Yes, again. By location, our rural and our urban districts were trailing. They're catching up. And by English learner status, there too we're seeing those gaps narrow. And what that means is that districts, tier one districts, so the top line there, those are tier one districts. Tier one districts, for those of you who don't live in this space, are our least well-funded district, our poorest districts. And those they had a higher teacher-student ratio because they couldn't afford as many teachers. Look how that is coming down. It reached a high. So 2017, that line, that's when we passed funding reform. Look how significant that gap had become. And look how it's closed. And that is literally by the tier status. So the dollars are going, and those districts are in turn making investments they believe will be supportive of their children that are built into the formula. We also look to see if those gaps are coming down by race and by income. Look at that. You guys don't get this because you're not as geeky as I am. That's unbelievable to see it literally disappear. And the only thing left to mind, because you know I want to give you the good news, but then I got to tell you the work we've got to do, is yes, 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 the overall diversity of our teacher force should match the diversity of our students. Not because it's pretty, not because it's woke, not because it's DEI, but because the research tells us it makes a difference for students. That the students who are languishing and struggling will do better if they have teachers of color. And so we need to continue to work on that. There's still a mismatch. All right, the other thing I mentioned earlier was student wellness. Here's how it's showing up. Chronic absenteeism, which is one of the most powerhouse indicators of later academic success, jumped during COVID. It has remained extraordinarily high. Overall, the state average is 26%. That is that's 10% higher than it was. And if you look, those gaps are even more, rates are even more significant when you look across race, when you look across income, when you look across language and learning style. There's no question that the mental health issues we've been talking about play a role here. And I want to mention, we don't have the slide here, but you can read also, teacher absenteeism is becoming an increasing issue. And again, it's all connected. It is a hard job. It is a hard job when you're dealing with your own issues. It's a very hard job when you are dealing with students who have that many issues where the attendance is that erratic. It takes a toll, and it's showing up in teacher attendance, which is seriously erosing as well. So when I say we need to care about wellness, that's one of the reasons why. All right. Let me move on. The other thing, though, in the teeth of that need is that thanks to increased EBF funding, our districts are hiring more student support personnel. There is an understood recommended level. Here's how many counselors you want to have per student, social workers per student, psychologists per student, pathologists per student, nurse per student. And the good news is we are improving every single one of those. And if you go in your report, you're going to be impressed by how much we're improving each of those. And then you're going to look to the right and you're going to see, my goodness, we're among the worst in the country. Because we're starting from so far behind. Did I mention we were 48th in funding? So we're making up ground, but I don't want you to think that's a magic elixir. It takes a minute. We are filling a very significant hole. And people are using the money in the district the way we need them to, but it's going to take us a minute to catch up. Only 13% of students in the state attend districts that have a sufficient number of counselors. And that's under normal circumstances, and arguably we're not. Which which also may explain, one of the things that the state does, which I personally love, I think it's one of the best things we do, is we look at culture and climate in schools, because culture and climate, research tells us, is a terrific predictor of what's going to happen down the line. So this is a worrisome graph I'm about to show you. We do the 5 essential survey in districts around the state. That tells us how we're doing with districts have in having strong, effective leaders, collaborative teachers, involved families, supportive environments, and ambitious instructions. All things which, taken together, suggest the school is going to do a better job with student growth and academic performance. In fact, the University of Chicago has studied this to death. If you are strong in any three or more of these indicators, you are positioned for academic growth. Since 2018 and COVID hit, however, the percent of schools with strongest implementation decreased on each one of the essentials individually, and the percent of schools that were strong in at least 3 of them dropped from 29 to 20%. So the hope is that as we come out of this and as those investments are made, we'll start to see that turn around, and we'll be the first to come and give you the good news when it does. At the same time, it's been a state priority to try to address student discipline and find more restorative ways to keep kids in classes, an overuse of suspensions. The good news is that number has come down significantly since 2014, since it became an issue, and Senator Lightfoot, we're saying, I know you were leading the charge on that. The bad news is we still have disproportionate suspension rates, including by race, particularly for black boys. And now we get to the number that I know everybody wants to talk about or unpack, which is how are we doing in our proficiency? And I told you earlier, our proficiency is where it was 15 years ago, and that's disheartening. Nobody wants to hear that. We have worked really hard. We were climbing up. There was real progress, not as big and great and huge, but it was there and it was steady. COVID really wiped it out. We are not alone. The whole country took an enormous hit, wiped out 20, 30 years of learning in one fell swoop. The evidence, so I want to give you a couple of hopeful notes, and I want to cover over this, but I want to give you a couple of things to keep in mind. One, Illinois held its own better than almost any other state, and one of the pieces of evidence I have for that is while our eighth grade math and reading remained flat, we moved from being, and I'm going to get this wrong, but 15th and 22nd in the country up to being 9th and 11th in reading and math. I got the exact numbers wrong, but they're in your report, so you can correct me. And who doesn't like to correct Robin? Am I right? The point is, we made significant progress in our national standing, not by doing better, but because we held our own better under very difficult circumstances. That is nothing to be excited about, but it suggests that we were doing some of the right things, we were making some of the right investments. And I'm going to give you one more bit of good news in a minute. First, I'm going to give you a little more bad news. Take a drink. The good news here is we are reducing gaps in learning proficiency. The bad news, if you look at this, if you're looking at this and to the right, we've got groups that are outperforming state averages. We've got groups that are underperforming. And what you're seeing, the dark blue is the most recent number. So if you look, the most recent performance. So what you can see is those gaps are shrinking. Everybody, you know, we're not pulling down this side, but we're pulling up the folks who have been underperforming, and that's good news. The bad news is you don't want a chart that looks like that. You don't want a chart where I can predict, based on any demographic feature, where you're going to show up on this. So we've still got a lot of work to do. And then something that is harder to show and less talked about, and it's also a national trend. So Illinois is in there fighting with everybody else. Our highest performing students, the ones who show up in the top 10%, they are killing it. They have recovered from COVID, and they're at pre-COVID levels now, which is great. Our students that are in the bottom 10% have not recovered and, in fact, have lost ground. So real vulnerable students, it was hard. There is no question that is connected to some of the other data points, mental health and other things. So we've got some real targeted work that we're going to need to do. And here's my other bit of good, bad news. Well, I'm sorry. I will try to find one that is just good news. Actually, there's one coming at the end. The good news is here, Illinois also continues to outpace the nation, as it has ever since we've been giving this report. We are in the top 10 for how well we are growing our students academically between third grade and eighth grade. This year, we were second and third in reading and math in the country. Let's applause, because that is great. But then let me peel that back one more level, which is you want kids to grow 5 years between third and fifth grade. And when we were kicking it and beating the rest of the country leading up to COVID, we were beating the 5 years. We were getting more than 5 years growth. And better still, we were getting that particularly from the students who needed to make up ground the most. What you can see here is we're back on course to get to the 5 years, but we're now below it. The last two times we've had the NAEP data, we have made 4.8 and 4.9 years growth. So we're rebounding. We're not where we should, but clearly we're doing something right given that outpacing of the country. So let's at least enjoy that. Also, there was good news, as I mentioned earlier, freshmen on track, graduation rates continue to be strong, they continue to grow, but every bit is important. We are narrowing gaps. All groups are improving in freshmen on track. All groups are improving in graduation rates. And you can see, so we put them all in here. Again, they're in your report on page 34, because you probably can't read all of the lines, so 34. But we wanted to particularly spotlight our English language learners. Look at the progress of that dark blue line. That's how much progress, that's how much of a gap is closed, and it seemed worth celebrating that. All right, that's going to take me to higher education. And then our panel. All right, higher education. I don't know if I'm on time or not. I'm really trying. I'm not talking quite as fast as I could. Am I okay? Am I not on track? Quicker, quicker. Higher education. All right. So there's one of our few just good news, good news. Both enrollment in post-secondary institutions and the rate of college going for high school graduates have decreased. This is not good news. Nothing has changed. Every additional bit of education that you get increases your likelihood of being employed, your lifetime earnings, your health outcomes, your civic participation. So this is not good news. But I'm about to get to the better news. So we need to turn that around. Affordability and access is obviously critical to that. But our post-secondary institutions have also become more socioeconomically diverse. And so this also shows you that we are, you know, the mix of kids who are going is changing. When I say that we're underinvesting in higher education, this is how it shows up. So these are for our 4 years at public universities. What you see is we're comparing Illinois to the nation in terms of the overall cost of attendance and our tuition and fees, and you'll see that we're above in both. That is not good news. That is one of the reasons we're not getting as many people in. People are getting priced out. The slightly better news is that net tuition, which is what kids actually pay, not the tuition and fees that posted, but the tuition they pay, is better. The percent of the median household income that you have to spend on the net price is more reasonable, but still not great. That's because MAP grant funding, the monetary assistance program, hugely invested in, though we need more. We've been able to increase the amount, increase the number served, but if we don't keep pushing, that is starting to erode. And number two, institutions themselves are digging deep and making up the difference. Some can do that better than others, which is, again, why you see enrollment in some and enrollment dropping in others that cannot afford to do that. Even though their financial situation is tricky, what we see is that universities are putting more money into those critical student supports, academic supports, wraparound services. As a result, our retention rates have increased, full-time students up from 71 to 76, from 42 to 48% in our 2 years. That's great news, though there are still disparities across race and income. Our graduation rates have continued to improve. It's better than this looks. We did it all. You know, the people who do this, they're very tidy. But if you look in there and you look at the numbers, our graduation rates have inched up for bachelor's and for community colleges. We are 12th in the nation for our completion rates in community colleges. Go community colleges. Juan, you want to take a special little... And our graduation rates for our 4 years is 13th in the nation. So we are doing something right. If we can get students there, what's going to happen is good. And the completion rates, earning four-year degree for community college transfers, through the roof, one of the best in the country. But the number of students who are transferring successfully is actually down. We can do the job when we get kids there. The job is we've got to get them there. So our overall last thing, only good news here, overall educational attainment, what you want is everything above the line to go up. That's where kids have earned degrees of some sort. That number continues to go up, generally for the state and in every single group. So go team. That's what we're aiming for. And with that, I am going to... I'm going to conclude. I'm going to turn it over. I'm going to ask all four of our panelists to come forward, but I'm going to introduce Julie, and then Julie's going to turn around and introduce the rest of you. Please do make your way up while I continue to chat, since I'm already behind. So I'm going to be joined by Linda Tortolero, Senator Kimberly Lightford, Stephen Asoye, and Dr. Julie Morita. Dr. Julie Morita is going to be moderating the panel, and I'm a little nervous about relinquishing control of this, but I know we're in very good hands. How do I know we're in good hands? Because there's not much this woman hasn't done or can't do. She heads the Joyce Foundation, which gives away $60 billion, actually, is it, by last count? And before she came to the Joyce to lead that very important portfolio and policy work, She has really led the efforts in public health. She was a pediatrician. She worked at the CDC. She's advised the White House. But she also worked here in the Department of Public Health in Chicago for many years, including serving as a commissioner for five of those years. So we're delighted to have you. Thank you so very much. We know we're in good hands. Julie.
Thanks so much, Robin. I don't think I can keep that pace up, so I'll do my best. It's really an honor and privilege to be here and join you all. I mean, this is exactly the reason I came back to Chicago, because I miss these kinds of gatherings and groupings, people who are so committed and passionate about common goals, and just thrilled to be back here today. So I am a pediatrician and public health professional, and at Joyce Foundation, which many of you know, we really focus and are committed to using policy to advance racial equity and economic mobility for the next generation in this Great Lakes region. And we love data, because we know data inform policy. And so today, to launch this critically important report, it is so important to be here, to be in support of this work, to be in support of Advance Illinois, because these data are incredibly valuable and are at such incredible risk. So, Robin, thank you for your advocacy for the importance of supporting ongoing data collection, because we can't do anything without these kinds of data. So thank you for so much for advocacy and also for this report itself. I'm going to be a little bit of a downer to begin with, just because I think it's important to acknowledge the context that we're in right now. We have a federal shutdown. We have an increased federal ICE presence in our city. And we have a U.S. Department of Education that is backing away from education. And what it does is it really highlights the importance of state-level work yet again. And so the value of the state we are in findings is just incredible, is underscored and highlighted, and could not be more important. So I'm really honored to moderate this esteemed panel, who will share their reflections on the findings in the report, and also their thoughts about what we can do moving forward. Because it's not just about having the data to think about and to contemplate, but it's really about how does that motivate and incite action. So I have the privilege of introducing the Honorable Kimberly A. Lightford. Senate Majority Leader Lightford is a champion of education reform, racial justice, and economic reform in Illinois. In 2023, she led the passage of the State Literacy Plan and helped establish the Department of Childhood Education. Her leadership has shaped landmark legislation on full-day kindergarten, paid leave, and minimum wage increases. And through her work at the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus four-pillar agenda, she continues to uplift communities through youth programs and advocacy. Thank you for joining us here today. I also have the honor of introducing Linda Sochiel Tortolero, a lawyer and a strategist, a fierce advocate for Illinois Latino community, especially in her newest role as president and CEO of the Latino Policy Forum, which works to achieve equity for Illinois Latinos by advocating for policies that improve education outcomes and increasing college enrollments and persistence. The forum also advocates for affordable housing, just immigration policies, and works to strengthen Latino civic power. Linda previously led Mujeres Latinas en Acción, playing a pivotal role in its transformative expansion and strategic positioning. Lastly, it's my privilege. Oh. Lastly, it's my privilege to introduce Dr. Stephen Isoye, Chair of the Illinois State Department of Education. He brings decades of experience in public education, first working in Illinois high schools as a science teacher, then rising up to the ranks, ultimately being superintendent of the Niles Township High School District. In his various roles in the district, he led major tech and curriculum innovations and received Illinois Teacher and Principal of the Year awards. Appointed in 2022 by Governor J.B. Pritzker, he helped shape statewide education policy. Dr. Isoye's career reflects a long dedication to student achievement, equity, and educational excellence. So now we'll jump into the questions. I'm going to ask this question of each of you. I have a question for each of you individually as well, but this one is for all of you. As you reflect on the work of the past 5 years, what area of work do you think has had the most meaningful impact on students and families? Dr. Soya, why don't you lead?
So I've been in different roles within the last 5 years, and to be in the state level of policymaking is a newer role for myself. Having worked as a local superintendent and having been an educator, I definitely saw what the needs of my community were. I think the most important thing that I got from this report was seeing the fact that, and thank goodness for Illinois, DEI. In my district, we call it EDI because we believe that equity always comes first. When we were talking about this. But the work that we're doing, as I look at the report and I look at what we're trying to do, has really evolved over time. You know, this all started a lot with NCLB. At that time, we had targets that we were supposed to hit. And when we didn't hit those targets, were we told? You're going to give, as a strategy, tutoring, or your students will leave and go to another building. That was the strategy that was then. And I have to thank this report because in this particular case, we have seen a build-up of best practices and research. And in the 5 years, I would like for our parents to be able to see how intentional those report cards are. The information that is there from chronic absenteeism and what we're monitoring, ninth grade on track. Right? Of course graduation rates are going to go up if your ninth grade is on track. Of course we're going to see things happen because the development of those data sets that I would like families to understand what it is about their schools, shows the improvement, and it's giving strategies to schools and to parents. The State Board of Ed, we all know, has been working on right-sizing scores. We were looking at a new iteration of what the report card will look like. And I think the important thing from that is that there are descriptors for families and for teachers and for administrators to understand what proficiency looks like at the different grade levels. So I have to admit, after hearing our presentation, and I had my little notes, literally little, and I was thinking about this, wasn't sure where you were going to start with the question. It can be very confusing, but if you look at these particular points of data, and rather than always look, we definitely want to look at proficiency, but if you stare at that only for our families, you're going to be frustrated. Instead, you have to look at the other data points, which are research-based and early warning signs and early indicators of success. And that's what I would like for them to see. That's happened over time.
Yeah, thank you for your response. Again, highlighting the importance of data, but also the explanation of the data and helping us make some sense of what to really focus in on, really critical. Senator Lightford, I turn to you.
Well, thank you. He has small notes. I have lots of notes. I was trying to culminate my years in the legislature since 1999, serving on the Senate Education Committee in some capacity, and I just cannot do it. I know that as a legislator, we have worked really hard to make sure that we keep up with everything that you just heard Robin talk about. So I would say for the last 5 years for legislators, we've significantly focused on the kindergarten readiness piece that you see on the chart there. It was a part of the Legislative Black Caucus pillar on education to implement that piece. And it's so good to see that it's actually making some significant strides in that effort. I think mental health for students is another area that we focus significantly on. We created a commission that did some work, and Governor Pritzker was very supportive in that measure, and now we have programs that are creating safe schools and safe communities, and also addressing the huge significant challenges around students who come to school experiencing a lot of traumatic experiences, and not allowing those children to just be set aside as behavioral health children, but to take a deeper stride into checking into what's really going on. If the kid is arriving at school, but they can't be still, they're not focused, sometimes there's indicators that there's something happening at home. And so we're trying to take a greater stride in truancy, and making sure we're very consistent about parents being responsible parents and making sure their kids are in school on time and ready to learn. When I think about the last 5 years, too, I think about something that wasn't attractive about 10 years ago when I put bullying initiatives out, safe schools, safe school grounds. I actually was beat up about it, like, why do you need that? Oh, we do. You know, social media has taken our kids, and they're teaching our children. We're no longer teaching our children. And as long as we allow our kids to stay on that little phone and on that computer all day and all night, we're losing ground as parents and as a community. And they take that behavior to school. And so they fuss and fight all night, and then they get to school and they act out. And it's preventing educators from being able to actually teach in their classrooms. And so when I think of mental health and I think of safe school grounds, I think of trauma, I think of all of it as one full wraparound service that needs to be addressed. And that's something we've been looking at significantly. And then I think I want to just throw a little curve in there. I just want to take us to literacy. So when we talk about English learners, I'd like for us to focus on literacy for all students. And I'd like for us to also provide a second language for students who aren't English learners and teach them another language as well. So I think that there has to be a significant focus on all children, literacy, proficient, making sure by third grade they're reading at or above level. And with our kindergarten readiness efforts and some of those things, I think we can get there together.
Thanks, Senator Lightford. Linda?
Sure. I am very proud of the forum's dedication to thinking about the trajectories of English language learners across our state. Oftentimes, we are very focused on what the data tells us, and it's a data deficit narrative in which we focus on the fact that at one point in time, English language learners are not learning at the same rates. But when we listen to our teachers in bilingual education, we know that later on, English learners actually have really great education outcomes. And so the forum took the moment to really talk to our bilingual education teachers, which I think is really important because I'm the daughter and the niece of bilingual education teachers. So listening to teachers is fundamental to the way that we should think about this work. And what we found was that this is actually very true, that English learners actually perform very well in later grades. Through our work with the University of Chicago's Consortium on School Research, we were educated even further about the fact that English learners have higher cumulative scores for SAT, for GPAs, and also for finishing high school. And so that gives us a lot of hope in terms of how we really think about telling that story about English learners and what we should really be doing investing in them. And I really appreciate what you said, Senator Lightford. I think it's fundamental that children of color, especially English learners, are able to learn both languages and more languages. I think that language is a great focus. And so, you know, our research showing that English learners are going to perform well if we invest in their education demonstrates that.
Thanks so much, Linda. Dr. Isoye, I'm going to go back to you for a question. And I think, you know, Robin made the point, and then Senator Lightford also commented about the mental health concerns that we have among our students in our schools. I mean, this challenges that we had predated the pandemic, but they were definitely exacerbated by the pandemic. And so, Dr. Isoye, I'm wondering, what is ISBE's strategy for building up the resources needed to support students? And how might ISBE utilize the recently released report, Children's Adversity Index, in this work?
So from ISBE has been working in the area of mental health and what they are able to provide students for a while. A lot of it came, there was a huge push that came during COVID. It was at that time we were able to establish SEL hubs, social-emotional learning hubs, that were throughout the state. That's a conduit that we currently use to be able to get services out to our districts. We've partnered with other entities and that were part of REACH, which is Resilience trauma-focused program that is specifically for schools, where schools are able to begin to take, for communities, where communities can work together to be able to figure out how they're going to be able to support the children and the families there. I think that's where the adversity index can come into play, as communities will have a better picture of some of the impacts that they face. We're also part of the RRIS, I believe it is, or RIIS, I think is what it is, and that is this resilience for schools. And that's where schools can focus specifically in particular areas that they're finding with their students. Now, all that said and aside, when you have that information that's there, and we know that services are there, we do understand that not only are students right now having a difficult time in our schools, but our adults are as well. And we heard that in regards to our teachers and our administrators, and how do we begin to support everybody. I think this is where you have a coalition of groups, such as those of you in this room, and also the Illinois Department of Human Services, and how we're able to support. Schools do not act alone in a vacuum, and it's really about how communities can come together. I think the striking data piece for me was when I was reading about hopelessness, and it was saying 51% of the female students were recorded as hopeless, and 25% of our male students was as such. I don't know if I should be surprised by that, but I was surprised by that. And I began to ask myself questions such as, what does hopelessness look like? But on the flip side, instead of dwelling on hopelessness, the question that I think we have to begin to look at would be, what does hope look like? And are we building the systems that provide students with a level of hope that they believe that they can be a part of a positive outcome in their own life? And if we're able to do that, I think just that general premise will begin to help us make a change or move the needle there. I think with ACEs, understanding ACEs, I think we should also look at what are the positive childhood experiences, which can mitigate, sometimes can act as a mitigation to some of the ACE topics, the six ACEs that are there. So I think there is a lot of work for us to do. I think I can list the things that we are doing, but I also kind of wanted to talk about some of the things where I think we should be able to focus on in the future of where the research is out there that we can utilize to the benefit of students.
So you give me hope by your acknowledgement of this need for us all to have hope, because I think that is really the positive outcome that we are seeking. And so I appreciate that perspective and your commitment, and also the holistic type of approach in terms of bringing community into this as well. I have one question for you, Senator Lightford, and then I'm going to end with asking all of you, what gives you hope? Having seen these results, some good, some bad, what gives you hope? But before we do that, Senator Lightford, I just want to ask you one question. The state has made a clear investment in the K-12 system, which is incredible. And so we've moved from 47th to 18th in the country. But what's worrisome to us is really this ranking at colleges and universities, where we're at the 48th in the nation. And so I'm wondering, how do you make the case for a continued investment in more in the K-12, but also more investment in the higher ed space?
You know, that's really simple. I could ask everyone in this room, did you go to school? Show of hands, everyone attended school. So apparently it's a necessity across the board. Doesn't matter what zip code you come from, doesn't matter how successful you are, doesn't matter if you're, you know, a successful CEO or you're good in hospitality. What matters is that you have an opportunity to earn a higher education that is sustainable, that is adequate, that provides equity, and that allows you an opportunity to achieve. And what we have now in the state of Illinois is a broken system in terms of having 12 universities that pretty much are all underfunded, but one, maybe two. And I think the challenge is there is to not pit one school against the other, but look at our universities as one system. There was a drastic decrease in funds that began in 2008. A lot of it depends on who the governor is, quite frankly, and the administration and where their priorities are. and we had a governor for a four-year period that lacked support of universities, and he failed to fund them. And so now we're on the brink of quite a few of our universities unable to meet the basic needs of their students. And so it's our responsibility as a state to fund the universities properly. We want to make sure that we're able to attain the students. Robin spent time sharing with you, once we get them there, they're able to achieve. But I don't know if she told you how many kids aren't enrolled there, right? How many kids are facing not only high school dropout, but they're not re-enrolling into high school. They're not attaining a GED. They need more remediation than any other state. And when they get to an associate degree level, they can't pass the basics exam for acceptance. So it's very difficult to get them from high school to a four-year university without there being some significant support to draw them there. And most of the university presidents, they don't have the opportunity to put those programs in place as they did back in the 80s when I was a student at Western Illinois University. Northern Illinois University had a program called the CHANCE program. Some of you might be familiar with some of those programs that targeted students, and they would spend their summer preparing prior to school starting in that August. All those programs are wiped away. There's very little left to say, hey, we really care about black students and low-income and underserved kids coming from districts that didn't quite prepare them properly. And so I think that we have a responsibility as a state. $60 million is not a lot of money in the scheme of things. And that was the investment that we needed to begin to turn this around. So when you look at the evidence-based funding model that we did from K through 12 and you see how well it worked, we need to do the exact same thing for higher education.
Thank you, Senator Lyford. That, I have Dan standing over my corner, but I do want to give people one chance to say what gives them hope. So quickly, maybe Linda, you can kick us off with what gives you hope.
What gives me hope is that bilingual education works, that we've seen great growth in how we support English learners across the state. I would really charge Illinois with also thinking about how we can identify English learners earlier from birth to age five so that we can continue to have that trajectory increase throughout that. I also have hope in the fact that the Advanced Illinois Report was really great in showing how college remediation rates have dropped significantly from 2013 to 2022. And I think that shows us that the college co-requisite strategy is working. But I have to say, because I have this platform, is that I am very glad that the adverse childhood experiences are being taken into account. Mm-hmm. But as a Mexican, as a Latina, I live in fear of any kind of effects at like a pandemic level, which we saw with COVID and how there were some retrenchments. With children who are English learners now, seeing what's on the streets of Illinois, seeing what's on the streets in Chicago. These are traumas that children cannot easily overcome without the supports. I think we really do need to think about, in Illinois, what kind of investments we're going to make to continue to provide, and not just for English learners, the friends of English learners, the teachers of English learners. We are a society that should support all of us, and I would never want to see Illinois' children not be able to have some sort of access to those mental health supports to make sure that they can focus in school, they can feel safety in school, and feel that they belong in school.
What gives me hope is the state's advocacy, many of you in this room, and the efforts and the strides that we've made together. We started out as a really big team coming together in 2009 for President Obama's Race to the Top. As a state, we were just not getting along. We were not working together. Everyone was in there for whatever they needed except for what was best for the child in the seat. That's my focus. I focus on the child in the classroom. And so what gives me hope is that we continue to work together to look at all of the challenges that our students face and come together collectively to come up with our plan of action to ensure that all kids, no matter what, have the opportunity to be successful in the state of Illinois.
Ditto. I think it was well said, probably better than I'll be able to put it. So hope, of course, goes by everybody that's in this room and by our governor and our legislators because of the support that they have been giving, and I'll focus specifically on K-12 education. It's support like we really haven't seen all the time, and it's been incredible, and it's how it's been able to move the needle. And how do I know that? Is that our state superintendent is out there in the field all the time. He is visiting schools. I have had the chance to visit schools with him, and I've been invited to various schools throughout the state. My entire career has been in the suburbs of Chicago. That was my lens. I have had the opportunity to go out into our rural communities, our urban communities, in different corners of the state. And the hope is because I see what schools are doing, and what they are doing may not always show up in the metrics that are there. And though we are looking at the metrics and the early warning signs as a collective of what we need to do and how we bring those best practices to the building, you know, how do you take policy and implement it so that it's actionable so that you can get an overall result? And that's what's slow. Same thing with our literacy plan. It's going to take a while before we actually see things happen. But my hope is that we have proven to ourselves in this state that we can do that. And we have seen that with the data points that are there. And so I believe that we are doing what we should be doing for our students. I believe that we have a lot more to do, and we have a lot more to prove to them that we really do care about what their future looks like. I do believe there are kids out there who have no idea that we care. But if we continue down the path that we're doing, and my hope is with the support that we're getting from all the different entities, I believe we can move the needle on that, and children will see that.
I will take the moderator's prerogative to share with you what gives me hope. And what gives me hope is all of you as advocates and champions for our children in the state of Illinois, and all of you, because you are all here because you care about our children and you care about our children and their education, so you all give me hope. And what gives me joy is the Cubs won yesterday, and they're playing today, and the Bears won 2 games in a row.
Thank you, Dr. Morita. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Senator Lightford. And thank you, Dr. Isoway. What an incredible conversation. We here at City Club are committed to keeping this going and having more of these discussions. So please, hopefully, you'll come back and join us. We do have some great programs coming up, although most of them are sold out, so make sure. Mismeasuring Impact in the Nonprofit Sector is on October 15th. Ambassador Rahm Emanuel is here on October 23rd. Governor J.B. Pritzker and Sky Perryman from Democracy Forward are here. They're actually at Chicago Cut in a unique members-only intimate conversation Friday evening, October 24th. And if you didn't see the invitation to that, it's because you maybe haven't renewed your membership. So please remember to do that, because we rely on your membership to put all these programs together. And then finally, for October, we've Fighting Economic Blight, introducing a statewide model for betting on Main Street on the 29th. So you can see we've got all sorts of topics. Education's at the top of the list, and it will always be for City Club and for Chicago civic community. So thank you again. Please come back. Enjoy this wonderful city and this beautiful week that we're having and these great sports and all the good stuff that's happening in our wonderful city. Thank you for being here at City Club.